Trejo. My Life of Crime, Redemption, and Hollywood was written by Danny Trejo with Donal Loeb and read by Danny Trejo with a collaborator's note read by Donal Loeb. It was recorded by Sergio Martinez and Peter Mack at Dave and Dave Recording Studios in Burbank, California, and Sean McCoy at Oregon Sound Recording in Central Point, Oregon. Editing, mix, and post-production by Like 2,000 Pounds. The associate producer was Claire Tadakuro. Trejo was produced and directed by Travis Tun. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Okay, so the clairvoyance I spoke about with Danny is just out of control, and I can think of, I can't tell you how many examples that it made me a believer when I was kind of more agnostic in certain ways, right? And one of them being, so when I refer to the difficulties I was going through at that time, I was going through a really hard time with my ex. I kind of felt like I was trying to do the right thing, but I was so caught between a rock and a hard place. And part of it is that our jobs, you know, and Danny really laid this out. He's like, this is what you do for a living. This is your job. You know, because I would get this kind of stick sometimes that it was like, you know, well, go off and do a fancy movie. And I'm like, look, this is what I do for a living. I would go do something else, but I'm not qualified. You know, I have to do these jobs and they don't happen close to home. And so anyway, I did this movie, The Tao of Steve, which was a big kind of hit at the Sundance Film Festival and all this stuff in 2000. So it was kind of this blip on the radar screen in that period of 2000. And there were film festivals, et cetera. And I went to the Santa Barbara Film Festival because The Tao of Steve was playing and we had to do Q&As, et cetera. And so against my ex was kind of mad about it, but I went up to Santa Barbara and we did the late screening and we did the Q&A and I spent the night there. And the plan was to go back to LA in the next morning. Now, because I was going through such a difficult time in my life in the weeks prior, you know, Danny really was like, when he said, stay close, I got your back. You know, he would call me and say, what's up, Holmes? Call me back. What's going on? Hey, Holmes, where are you? And I felt so embarrassed and ashamed about my continuing situation that I actually just ghosted him, you know, because these messages became increasingly more intense. And so what started is, hey, Holmes, I miss you. Give me a call. And then he'd be like, where you at, Holmes? And then he'd leave a message. All right, Holmes, I'm going to send the fucking Mexicans to find you, right? Then right before I went to Santa Barbara, he left a message and he said, listen, Holmes, God is going to put you in my fucking path, right? And so I was like, okay, got to call Danny. Go up to Santa Barbara, do the film festival, do the Q&A, spend the night, start to, you know, plan on heading back to LA the next day. And then the next morning I woke up and there was a torrential rainstorm pounding Southern California. So I start to drive and I'm listening to like News 980, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, you know, record numbers of crashes, stay off the road. And it was true. It was just the conditions were terrible for driving. And so I pulled over and I called my ex and I said, listen, there's a terrible storm going on. I'm just going to sit at an IHOP or something for a couple of hours and wait it out to let things chill out. And she's like, you get your ass home, blah, 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 blah. And it was kind of the accumulation of a lot of shit, you know. It was just like I was roiling with this anger. I was just like overwhelmed with this anger and frustration. And I got back in the car and I got in the car angry. And I'm like, I got to get, you know. So it's you know, this is, it's terrible. I'm watching cars wreck. I got to get home. My life is like, I'm stuck in this situation with someone that I can't work things out with or don't understand. Won't listen. And I'm driving south on the 101 and I'm running through these things in my mind and they kind of, you know, subtly but but definitely concretely translate from my roiling brain into my foot on the accelerator. And I found myself going too fast in the fast lane on the 101 South. And I hit a huge kind of, you know, there was a lot of water accumulated by the separation wall. And I hit this water and I started to hydroplane. And I was trying desperately to just kind of fishtail and try and work my way through it with the steering wheel. And the back end of my car went in and it hit the concrete median. And I started doing 360s across the 101 in five lanes of traffic. And as I was spinning around, I would see like, oh, there's a truck driver and there's a minivan full of people. And, you know, it was just so dicey. There was so many cars I could have taken out. And I go all the way across the freeway and I hit this massive wall. And then I bounce all the way back into the middle of the 101 and my car's completely totaled, just crumpled like a, you know, recycled beer can. And I look down the freeway and I see that for some reason that there had been maybe enough of a gap between the group I was with on the freeway and whoever was behind, but people definitely started to move over to the left, slowed, you know, they were adjusting to this wrecked car in the middle of the freeway. And I had this moment where I was like, well, my arms are moving. Shit, I'm alive. Okay. And you're just so your body's surging with adrenaline. And so I was like, okay, what do I do? I got to figure this out. And I saw, it was a silver Mercedes with tinted windows, and they drove kind of closer to me, and I could see kind of the shadows of concerned faces just looky-looing. And I stepped out of the car, but this car had pulled over on the shoulder because they wanted to see if I was all right. They were good Samaritans, I figured, you know. And I step out of the car, and I'm standing in the rain on the 101. And out of the silver Mercedes steps Danny from the passenger's door. And he's pointing at me. And I said, Danny, I was just going to call you. And he said, I told you God would put you in my fucking path. And I was like, oh, I'm a full believer, 100%, 2 million percent, like, whoa, you know. And there have been so many things like that that I just can't, I can't tell you, like the bond that we have and the role he's played in my life, you know. And then so I had an old lit agent named Lydia. She mentioned to me, she said, you know what, your friend Danny should write a book, you know, that would be amazing. And I said, you know, I mean, I'm sure it's something that's been kicked around, but I'll mention it to him. And he's like, hell yeah, you know. And they had said, you know, it had been mentioned before, but the whole concept of like finding some writer guy from the East Coast to sit down and hang out with Danny was just like, it wasn't going to fly. You know, and Danny's a nice guy, but when he's in those scenarios, it's just a different scene. And so we put together a proposal, and I had a new lit agent, and they put together the pitches, and we pitched it, and, you know, we settled with, not settled because it was fantastic, but Danny chose Michelle Herrera Mulligan, the editor at Simon & Schuster, because she just had a different energy and compassion and love for this project. She got it and him immediately. And we went with Atria Books and Simon & Schuster and started to write. And Michelle was fantastic because, and we were on the same page, you know, go deeper, more honest, more candor, because I have to say there are some people in Danny's world that don't want to go deep, and you don't, you know, and I don't want to say it directly but you know, Danny and I go to these meetings in quotation marks, you know, these things that happen every day in almost every town around the world where strangers can sit together and open up and share honestly about their lives. And it helps us grow, and it helps us learn from other people's experience, strength, and hope. And so we've always known that the strength of these stories is in their candor. And, you know, I immediately, like, you go to some of these, you know, sometimes I'll hear someone speak and out of fear, generally speaking, they'll put on the tough guy shit and be, I was the baddest this and the toughest that and the baddest this and the toughest that. And it's like, well, where's the humanity? Where's the fear? Because you're so full of fear, you're putting this mask on right now. And Eddie Bunker had said to Danny years ago when there was a memoir came out. It was a kind of tough guy that everyone knew around L.A. And Eddie Bunker said to Danny, badass, badass, too scared to show his ass, you know. And Eddie, he told Danny years ago, you know, Danny, you're going to write a book someday. And because Eddie was just this brilliant, it's in the book, right? Prison novelist. And Eddie was Danny's, it's like their hearts were fused while Eddie was on planet Earth and even beyond. And so, you know, Danny's honesty and what happened was, even though I know him so well and I've known him obviously for, gosh, almost, you know, I met him almost 30 years ago and we really became kind of tied at the hip 22 years ago. I didn't know these stories and his kids didn't know these stories. And so when Gilbert, his son, and Danny Boy or Danielle, when they were reading parts of this book, they were like, I had no effing idea. And what we actually kind of delayed the first turn-in date because we were just so deep in the process of me going and hanging out and us talking and recording it and transcribing. And then Danny would say something off the cuff and he's like, well, you know, I remember one day I was seven and blah, blah, you know, and he tells a story that's so, that's in the book. It really becomes kind of the fulcrum on which so much of his life shifted. It's so fascinating because the secrets and lies that adults carry and try and move forward with is the shit that just damages us for the rest of our lives, right? Like we have to deal with that. Now we have to contend somehow with carrying their messed up stuff. And so Danny was really the tidbits that were the third rail, you know, that the power line that runs through a good memoir or story. It's like, what's the journey of this person and not the dates, places, and things and stuff, but the emotionally, what's driving you, what broken piece is driving you subconsciously, and where are you replicating this behavior in your life and why? And so it those were all coming out in conversation. And I just, God, I love him so much. I remember, you know, there's stories I had to leave out. So I'm working on the book and, that's kind of my daily thing. And at the time and jujitsu, thank God. And so I live in the San Fernando Valley, and I was driving over Laurel Canyon to go to this jiu-jitsu class, and then Danny called me, and he said, hey, Holmes, like, when are we getting together? When are we working on the book? And I said, well, I'm just going to this class, and I'm going to be done in an hour, and then I'm heading straight to your place. So get done with the class, and I start driving to Danny's house, and I'm just listening to BBC radio, my shtick, you know, and my Bluetooth, my phone rings in the car, and it's my friend Jules. And he goes, did you hear about your friend Danny? And I was like, oh, Christ, what? Jeez, what? What about Danny? I just talked to him an hour, 15 minutes ago. And I was scared, you know. And he said, he just saved a baby. It's all over the news. And I go, what the fuck are you talking about, man? I just talked to him an hour and 15 minutes ago. He was at his house. And he was like, when you getting over here to work on the book? What the hell's going on? He goes, you'll check it out. You're going to see. So I get to Danny's house and there are news crews and stuff there. And what had happened was right after Danny talked to me, he had left his house to drive up to Chubby's Automotive, this buddy of his where his cars are worked on. And he was driving and in the next lane, there was an older lady who Danny noticed. They were heading in the same direction, but Danny was like, I don't know if she was having a stroke or what, but man, she was staring straight up at the ceiling and we were moving towards this red light and I was beeping my horn. I was frantically trying to get her attention because something was going on. Something happened. And this woman was in like a Ford Explorer, some kind of SUV. And so they come to this light and Danny has to brake because there's cross traffic on the green light. and this woman just blows through the light and gets totally T-boned by this car, and it's just boom, like, you know, that steel on steel explosion. And immediately, and it was, this was all, of course, on the news and caught on security camera footage and stuff. You just see this Danny Trejo man in his cholo wear short, you know, just jamming across like someone's lawn and running as he does. The helpers run towards the accidents, the bad stuff, you know. So he runs up to this car. It's totally, it's all crumpled up. It's been flipped over. And the people inside are kind of crushed. And what he notices, it's the older lady. And in the back seat, there's a kid in a child seat. And this is spectacular, and this is Danny. So Danny is trying to wrench open the door, the woman's door. And, oh, this is before he noticed the kid. He's trying to wrench open. This young Mexican guy came up, and he goes, "We can do it, Holmes." And they, one, two, three, boom, and they rip this friggin' door off. And the woman says, she's covered in blood, and she goes, the baby, get the baby. So Danny looks. He sees that there's this child in the child seat in the back seat. And so, but that part of the car is kind of crumpled, and you can't really get through, but the window was broken, and Danny reaches in, but he can't, he has to press the click to get the child seat off. And he also notices, because this is Danny, that for a baby, this isn't a baby. This is maybe a four-year-old kid, but he sees in that kid that there is something a little different and a little special. And the thing is, like I said, he's the most brilliant and intellect and emotionally intelligent, and he just picks up 1,000 different things. And he knew immediately that this child was special and had some kind of, was on the spectrum in some way. And this is something that Danny, it's bizarre that there are people flock to Danny, dogs flock to Danny. There's a safety and a strength about him that animals, we as animals recognize, you know? And so this young woman, she goes, "Oh, you know, I'll help you, Danny Trejo." You know, and of course everybody knows who he is. And she had really long, skinny arms, and she reached through from the other side of the car and was able to unclick this kid's car seat. And Danny gets the kid, and he can see the terror on the kid's face. Do you know what I mean? And he said one thing about kids who might have some bit of autism or you know, Asperger's or something, is they don't like to be grabbed in terms of you reaching out and grabbing them. It has to be kind of their decision. And somehow energetically, you have to put that through your arms and your soul to make them be the ones who actually reach and grab. And somehow that was transmitted, you know, and this kid grabs him and is looking for his grandmother. And Danny knows he can't let this boy see his grandmother like that. So he starts taking him away from the accident, and he says to the kid, "We've got to be strong, right? We've got to use our superpower strengths." And he made a kind of superpower muscle, and the kid said, "Superpower, superpowers, you know." And Danny had, before he got the kid, he'd given the mom his shirt and wiped some blood off of her face. At this point, the EMTs are there, and they've got the grandma out, and they've got her on like a stretcher, and he really wants to see his grandmother. So Danny takes the boy back to the grandmother, and he reaches out and he touches her, and he goes, "You'll be okay, Grandma, superpowers," and touches her, you know. And this is the stuff. This is the multitude of life in these moments. You know, that's Danny. And then the news crews were there. And of course, because it's Danny, they want to do this thing. And Danny's like, he's wrangled with this since he's become famous, but this is who he was before this notoriety and this fame and stuff. Is our job on planet Earth is to help others. And while it might seem self-aggrandizing and whatever to do a news interview about the, like, who, like Danny, I can tell you so many things of where Danny saved a life in this regard. It's just bizarre. He's like, God puts me in these situations. And he said, you know, "I don't mind doing this stuff because I think I am just God's trumpet, you know, of saying we're here to help each other." And I mean, all of this transpired since I said, man, hold on, I'm going to jiu-jitsu class and I'll be there in an hour and a half. And then that night they were like on talk shows or whatever. I think David Spade had a talk show and they were like, did you see that thing where Danny Trejo saved that baby? And, you know, they were like, it's amazing and stuff. And then, of course, David was said, but, you know, man, to do the interview, he had to take his shirt off. Like, they were laughing about it. And I thought in the back of my mind, I'm like, Danny took his shirt off because he used it to wipe the blood off of the grandma in the crash. That's why he was standing there shirtless, you know. But that's Danny Trejo, and my God, I love this man.
Trejo, My Life of Crime, Redemption, and Hollywood is available in print from Atria Books.